Good evening, everyone. My name's Warren Lance, and I want to welcome you to the weekly Take Action Team podcast, where each week not only do we want to inspire you into taking action, but we want to give you some skills to really move your business forwards. And let me tell you, the gentleman I have the absolute privilege of interviewing today is one of these guys that can move your business forward. So have pen and paper ready. I mean, he started network marketing at the young age of 18. He was determined, pardon my language, full of piss and vinegar that he was going to get this done, and guess what he did? He's now a multiple six-figure money earner, and the thing that he's most proud of is his beautiful daughter, Aiden. So please join me in welcoming four-star Golden Circle, Jason Liu to the line. How you doing, Jason?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Warren.
It's going to be fun. And, hey, congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Now, before we get into, I guess, just the call topics and really helping people move their business forwards, why don't we start with, like, how did you get involved in the industry in the first place? I mean, I understand you were 18 when you started. What happened? Like, how did you find out about network marketing?
I was actually dragged down. I don't think I had any clue. I grew up in San Francisco, California. I ended up going to school down in San Diego. And I was down there studying, I think, veterinary medicine of all things. So in a Chinese family, you only get away with either being a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, and so I was going to be an animal doctor. And so I can vividly remember they took me into like the vet hospital, and like day one they show you how they do like a neuter and spay for a cat and a dog. And I joke with my friends, but like for 18 years that's what I really thought I was going to do. I was going to play with puppies and kitties, and then that first day like the dream got shattered. I think that was the end of my veterinary career as soon as I saw that. And so I was sitting around in college saying, what am I doing with my life, or what am I going to do? And I think I was fortunate enough that my dad handed me a book called Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And I read that when I was 17 years old, and I kind of got this bright idea of residual income, leverage-based income. Like, I loved this idea, but I always thought you had to make a ton of money. Like, you had to own homes. You had to buy real estate. You had to do, you know, make a commercial, do something. And I didn't really know how I was going to create it. And so one day I was studying, and a friend of mine said, look, we're going to go check this thing out. And I thought we were honestly going to a party. And they drove me 45 minutes from like La Jolla, which is where UC San Diego was, over to USD. And on the back of a chalkboard, for the first time, someone drew me a compensation plan. And it blew my mind. At the time, it was like a long distance, they were selling long distance service. So like paging internet access, this is like 2000. And I was sitting there, and on the board, someone wrote down something like 7,000 customers equals $10,000 a month. And I'm sitting there and thinking, like, in my dorm room, there's at least 15,000 people that could buy long distance service in the dorms. I'm like, I'm going to crush this. This is going to be amazing. And I couldn't sleep for days. I was like, I'm so going to make it. And then long story short, 3.5 years later, I think my biggest check was like $350. Like, I failed miserably at it. So I did not have that easy, fresh start. Like, I was shy. I was really quiet, Warren. I had a hard time looking people in the eye. So all those things that you need in terms of sales, confidence, network marketing, I had none of it. Like, I was the worst prospect you can imagine. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got started.
Wow, that's quite the start. Now, okay, so you're 3.5 years in, your biggest check is $350. Clearly, this isn't working. I mean, didn't you at some point, like many individuals out there, start to think that this is a scam?
I don't know that I ever thought it was a scam. I think that for me, the question was, could I really be successful at it? Like, I'd seen enough people, great individuals, just great mentors that had made it in the industry. I think a lot of times it was just my own, the dialogue that was going on in between my head. You know, what are my friends going to think of me? At the time it was like, try to talk to every single person. Do I have enough influence? to be able to even have a conversation with a professional, you know, at 18 years old, at 19 years old, you know, who am I to share with someone or show someone how they're supposed to go out there and make money? And there was that wrestling, I think, that happened. And then also just getting in my own way. I don't think I took nearly enough action, you know, nearly enough time to really warrant the success I wanted. So those first 3.5 years, I think the best part about it was it honed my mind to think like an entrepreneur in terms of me being responsible for my own success, taking it upon myself to read everything I possibly could, get in front of as much as I could, listen, take notes. I mean, those things that I think that in our traditional workforce, and by all means, I have nothing against our traditional workforce, you know, there's someone telling you where to show up, when to show up, you know, how you're supposed to show up, and there's not this individual thinking for yourself. And I warrant those three years with kind of giving you the foundation of kind of taking responsibility of what's to come. And, you know, I think year 3.5, I finally got some mentorship. I finally got some really great leaders showing me, teaching me. I think age helped a lot too, just messing it up enough. And I think year 3, I finally made. Year 4, I think I made around 33,000.
Okay, so you're 22 years old, and
yeah.
You've now hit, you said about 33,000, which is fantastic.
Yep.
I mean, at that age, there's a lot of 22-year-olds that would love to be making 30 grand a year.
Yeah. Yep.
So you at this point, you're still with this technology company selling services. When you hit year 4, were you still with them?
So the funny story is that tech company ended up morphing into a health and wellness company. They were a supplement vitamin company. So essentially, it's a long story, but essentially that company ended up shutting down its telecom side after telecom got deregulated. And they had to move, they had to shake, and they had to turn into something that was relevant. And so we went through this weird year where we didn't have a name to the company, didn't know exactly what we were going to do, and it kind of morphed into a health and wellness company. And that, coupled with, I think, some experience, is finally what catapulted my business a bit to have something that really was relevant to people, was really relevant to consumers.
So now I'll say this to you. It's a health and wellness company. A lot of health and wellness companies push weight loss. Was that company pushing weight loss?
It didn't start with weight loss. It eventually turned into weight loss, but it started with supplements.
Okay, so it's supplements slash weight loss.
Yeah.
Now, you being still young, you're 22 years old. Okay, you're Asian, and typically a lot of Asians tend to be on a more slender build.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're blessed that way. Maybe it's a bless or a curse, who knows? But anyways, you Asians tend to be more slender. So here you are, 22 years old. You're probably already on the slender side. I've seen pictures of you. I know you were. And you're now encouraging people to take nutritional supplements and this weight loss stuff, and you had your best year yet. You hit 33,000 a month. So something shifted, because all of a sudden, I mean, a lot of young people, you know what, they're not interested in weight loss. They're not interested in vitamins. I'm interested in the party happening Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and where we're getting our beer and what's going on. I mean, so how did you sort of navigate those waters? Because clearly you figured something out to move your business forwards.
Yeah, I think that I think what's really beautiful about the community that's between, I would say, you know, 18 to, I don't know, 30, 18 to 35. I think what's really beautiful on the younger end of the spectrum, you have people that are so open to ideas. There's no set direction that people have been defining their life. So if you've grown up saying, I want to be an engineer my entire life, your world revolves around that one belief, that core belief, and you kind of set yourself up on that path. What's really beautiful about young people here is that they don't have a determined, I'm going to only do it this way. And I think it makes, especially that younger demographic, much more open to something like network marketing. They don't have preconceived notions. They're looking for some way to kind of, I don't want to call it shortcut, but, you know, almost hack the system. How do I find a way to have the leverage and freedom to go out there and do what I really want? I don't want to wait till I'm 65. I don't want to wait till I'm 75. And so I think there's a lot of flexibility there, but with that flexibility comes the other side of it too. So you have a lot of young people that get started in network marketing, but it's volatile, right? 1 week they're like, I'm gonna take over the world. The next week they're like, oh, I'm just gonna party with my friends. And you're right. They're more worried about where the beer money is gonna come from than, you know, investing into their health. So the big thing for us, and really where the transition happened, was finding people that had had life, and I don't have a better way to say this, kind of smack them upside the head. Life had to happen for people in order for them to either A, take their health seriously, or B, take their finances seriously, right? So that kind of people coming out of college at 22 weren't perfect demographic. They were the people thinking, oh, I'm going to make $10,000, you know, a year, I'm going to get a great cushy job, and life's going to be great. But at 24, 25, 26, and I think really 27, 28, you had people that had been in the workforce for a couple of years that realized that that great education didn't necessarily guarantee their success, that their time at the office was a lot harder than they thought it was going to be, that the lifestyle that they thought they were going to lead really wasn't there for them. And so they were looking. There was a need and desire for them to change something in their life. And the same was true in terms of health, right? Here were these young college kids who could drink on the weekends, feel great, not worry about their weight. But once they got into a sedentary lifestyle, sitting behind a desk, working on computers, now health started to be a challenge. So you had to, at least for me, find that sweet spot where they had the finances to be able to sustain a business, because let's be honest, it takes some finances. They had had life happen to them, whether from a health standpoint or a financial standpoint, and there was a need for a solution. And that was when it became more solution-oriented, Warren, that's when I think we started kind of to build traction in network marketing.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I agree with you. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with 18-year-olds starting out and supporting them and encouraging them, but the truth is, as you said, the first couple of years, I mean, it is going to be growing who you are. It's developing, doing the personal development work, studying the industry. And what I love about your story is that you didn't let the lack of money during the first 3.5 years take you out. You knew you were going to master this industry. And you studied, you worked on it, and, I mean, you did it. So huge congratulations there. So share with us, so you're now in this health and wellness industry, and I know probably 8 years into your journey, I mean, things are starting to go. Something happened that made you think that you were with the wrong company, and you started to look. What sort of took place there? Because I think that's also an important part of your story. And then I know you went to your current company, again, health and wellness company, supplements and all that, weight loss, and you've gone on to become a multiple six-figure income earner in that company. So can you tell us a little bit about that transition point?
Yeah, I think that that was one of the more challenging, I think, experiences that I had. I definitely grew and learned probably the most out of that experience. It's probably you learn from the ones where you really fall down on your face a bit. I'll take the long circle around here for just a moment, but Warren Buffett really talks about something, and he says, you know, he was once asked, you know, what makes you invest into a company? And he said, once I do my due diligence, once I really go through the numbers and crunch everything, I sit down with the owners of that company. And he said, my final litmus test is this, he said, and I'm paraphrasing here. He said, when I sit across the table and look them in the eye, what I'm trying to determine is whether they love the money more than the business or whether they love the business more than the money.
Mm.
He said, if they love the business more than the money, I've done my due diligence, I will always invest. But here was the key thing he said. He said, I will invest and get out of the way. And I think in my previous opportunity, and there's nothing wrong with it, the ownership was more in love with the money than the business. And typically in network marketing, what's most profitable for the ownership isn't always most profitable for the field, at least from a short-term perspective, right? What's most expedient, what's fastest, what's going to make the most amount of money, doesn't always correlate with what is going to do best for the associate, the field, the people that are actually, you know, in the trenches of working. And so when those two don't match up, you have conflict. And, you know, it's not to fault anybody. It was a different value base. It was a different place of, you know, what we believed in terms of integrity. There's a lot of gray area and gray space, and I'm not going to go into that. But the big part here for me was, at the end of the day, where we were headed, where we wanted to go in terms of how I wanted to show up in my business, how I wanted to take care of my business, how I wanted to show up for my team, was different than where management was heading. And so it was a really tough decision because we, you know, we'd built a decent-sized organization. We were top income earners of that company. And it was one of those things where we said, you know, is there really a company, A, that we can go to, and B, do we really believe that we can really do this all over again? Because it was, when I ended up leaving that company, it was around 8.5, almost 9 years I had spent in that company straight from college. And I didn't know a darn thing outside of that. So I'm sitting there saying, I think I was 28, 29, saying, what am I doing with my life, or what am I going to do with my life? So, yeah.
Wow. So it really boiled down to an integrity issue, and you just felt that this company wasn't going in the direction that really made you feel good. And wow, it speaks volumes of who you are that you were prepared to take a stand and say, because you're not an industry jumper. There's network marketers out there that jump from company. It's the flavor of the month thing, and they're boom, boom, boom. I mean, you've been with the company 8.5 years, and just in your heart, you felt like this isn't going to be my long-term home. And then you started doing your due diligence. Clearly, you've met with the owners of your new company, and I can clearly say that they love the business more than the money. I mean, the money's great, don't get me wrong, but they clearly love the business. I mean, they're all about creating a legacy organization, and what's so amazing about it, Jason, you'll love this, how so many network marketing companies fuel their success, fuel their growth by rapid international expansion. And I mean, there's some companies out there that they're 5 years old and they're in like 60, 70, 80 countries already. Yet the company you're presently with and I'm presently with, I mean, they came in to build a legacy company at the five-year mark. They were only in three countries. I can remember some of the network marketers just going squirrely, what are you doing? Let's open up Europe. Let's open up Southeast Asia. Let's open up Australia. And it was like, no, we're building this for long-term success, for long-term stability. We want to build a legacy company that'll become the next Amway. And they're clearly doing that. So it's super exciting, and I think you made a very wise decision, Jason. No question about that.
Thanks, Warren.
Well, hey, let's jump into, we have some amazing bullet points that I know I want to get into with you. You're really sort of big on it. It's easy to blame, like, the company, your upline, lack of skills, your age, yet you manage. You want to expand upon that? Because I'm sure you've had this conversation with many of your team members and helped them through that blame situation. How do you navigate those waters?
I think you have a choice every single day in terms of how you show up. And everyone's circumstance is going to be a little bit different. So I can just speak to mine as opposed to everyone else's here. But I think that when you play the victim role where it's, you know, why is me, you know, why did the bird, you know, go to the bathroom on my car? You know, why is my street not on the sunny side? And we can play that game all day long. But when you play that role, when it's the why me situation, you kind of are in the back seat. And I like the analogy of driving a car and someone else is in that front seat. And every time they yank the wheel, your emotions go one way, and they yank the wheel, and your emotions go the other way. And you ride kind of this crazy roller coaster where you don't feel like you're really in control of what's happening on a day-to-day basis. Someone else is out there. And I think it's really easy as entrepreneurs, when things go really well, we like to take success. Like, we like to take the credit for that success. Like, it's really fun to do. Like, oh, you know, do you see what I did? Let me post that to Instagram. Let me post that to Facebook. But the truth is, what we really need to be focused on at times, too, is taking responsibility that when things don't go our way, that's not to beat ourselves up. That's not to say, oh, you're silly, you're stupid, we all have that dialogue. That's not that either. But it's to say, look, I had a hand in that. You know, no matter how little the situation, it seems like I had nothing to do with that. Trust me, I mean, if you got into a car accident, you had to leave your house at a very specific time, drive a very specific speed to find your way into that accident. And while we don't want to, you know, take responsibility for those things, sometimes we have a larger hand in things than we know. So being able to say, look, you know what, this didn't go my way, fine, let's reassess, let's get back to the drawing board, let's get some feedback, and let's go at it again, really allows you to be in the driver's seat, allows you to move from the back seat to the front seat, say, you know what, you know, I'm going to take responsibility, I can change it, I can fix it, I can learn it, I can ask for help, I can reach out to mentors, and that's what's really beautiful about this industry, Warren, is the fact that, you know, there are so many people out there that want to help you, that want to guide you like yourself, to be able to help people figure out what's working and what's not. So if you're willing to show up, take responsibility. Look at your business right now and say, no matter what's happened so far, you know what, I'm responsible, and if that's the case, I can work on me. I can fix me with a little bit of help and a little bit of time. So, yeah,
wow.
That's the idea.
Love that. Absolutely love that. I mean, it's all about course correcting. I mean, you think of that plane leaving San Francisco flying to Hawaii. I mean, technically that plane, I think, is off course something like 98% of the time. And yep. The automatic pilot's always course correcting, right? The wind, the movement, but it's always shifting, course correcting. But it knows where it wants to end up. It wants to end up in Hawaii. And no different than you, you knew you wanted to be a multiple six-figure money earner, and you've been constantly course correcting, and now you are. And I think that's brilliant. I mean, absolutely, we have to take responsibility. I love that. Now, what about stepping into your fear? You're really big on that. And I mean, as starting at age 18, oh my goodness, there had to have been some fear there. But I mean, I know I've heard you say it before, fear and overwhelm keeps you away from what you want. And that's true. So many people, there's all these voices in their head, and not only in their head, family members and cousins and neighbors and everyone like, what are you doing getting into network marketing? I mean, not everyone gets those stories, but a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. So can I do this? What do you have to say to people about stepping into your fear?
I'll share with you, if you don't mind, I'm going to share with you a really quick story. So just to give you an idea, I was, when I first decided I was going to do network marketing, this is probably about 2.5 years into it. And this is in the point in time where I'm not making any money. And I remember being at my cousin's wedding. There were 200 people. And I come from my parents are incredible. They've always thought outside the box. But the rest of my family comes from a lot of education. So Stanford, like all my cousins, Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Carnegie Mellon, Ivy League schools.
Cool.
Sitting there. Yeah. Oh, high-end schools. I mean, highly intelligent. I had one cousin that graduated Stanford at 18. I think he got accepted. Sorry, he got accepted to Stanford at 16, 18, like really high on the spectrum scale. So long story short, I'm sitting there and I'm telling my uncle that I'm going to do network marketing for a living, that this is what I'm going to do. I'm passionate about it. And he gets up in front of 200 people and literally verbally berates me, my parents, and everyone there like, I can't believe you're going to let your kid do this. You're ruining your life. And this is in front of my entire family, which to say the least was humiliating. At the time, my parents were horrified, not at me, but at this uncle. And I got this kind of personal vendetta that I'm going to figure out no matter what, I am finding a way to make this thing work. if not to just find, at the time being 18, 19, 20, get back at this person. But the point of the situation is we all go through those horrific experiences. And when they do, if you ever get that verbal, visceral reaction, recognize that it's less about you. Whoever's saying it, whoever's directing at you, it's less about you and more about them. More often than not, what they're seeing is something in you that they don't like about themselves. What they're really recognizing is maybe someone that is shaking up their world, doing something they wish they would have done, and it's not you necessarily, it's just what they're remembering about themselves that just is a reflection back that they don't like. Same as when we meet someone and we absolutely love them, there's things about them that we see in ourselves that we really love. Understand, if it ever comes to that, it's not about you. And also know the fact that if you're really pushing those boundaries where it's scary, it's new, it's different, those areas right now, that fear sometimes is just you expanding your comfort zone. And if you're willing to hang out there just a little bit, get a little bit more uncomfortable, it starts to get more and more comfortable for you. So don't run, don't hide. You just got to kind of manage it sometimes. And the biggest thing that I tell my team is, if you're feeling fear, stop thinking. Like, stop feeding it time. Fear loves time. If you're afraid and you just run back to the books and run back to, I got to think about it, I got to figure it out first before I do it, nothing's ever going to happen. But if you kind of take that fear and jump, just head in the right direction, jump, and say, I'm going to figure out as I go through the process here, more often than not, by not having to think through it, by not feeling like you got to be perfect with it, you have those breakthroughs. And you're going to figure out that it wasn't so bad. What was going on in your mind, those monsters in your head, were far worse than the actual experience itself. So,
wow.
A bit all over the place.
I mean, that's your big thing. It's like, so just jump. Just do it and figure it out as you go. I mean, in essence, that's what you did for your initial 8 years of your career. It was, you really were figuring it out as you went. Even though there was fear and there was all this other stuff going on, you just kept going.
I'm still figuring it out, Warren.
Yeah, aren't we all? Aren't we all? Well, okay. Man, I got pages of notes. I love some of your analogies. Just brilliant. Especially the one about the steering wheel with your emotions, the driver just turning one way, other way, and you're all over the map. I mean, yeah, we have to take responsibility. I love that. So what about principles of prospecting? I know you do a training, and you take people through, you sort of have like three principles of prospecting. And again, prospecting is all about filling the funnel. If we want to be successful in this industry, at some point, we have to enter into a conversation via verbally, via through Facebook, but you got to dialogue with people somehow. And I know one of your principles of prospecting is less is more. And I'm thinking, what the heck are you talking about, Jason? I mean, the whole idea is to fill our funnel and find those people that want to link arms with us. I mean, we're happy to take on product users, but we're looking for business builders to link arms with. What do you mean less is more, buddy? Have you lost it?
I might have. But I think that in any given day, you've got prospects that are, they've got families, they've got career, and time is really the biggest premium that we all have. It's what really defines what we do in a day. And so with most of the people that I work with, and I'm sure you as well, they have full-time careers, they have full-time families, they have a busy life. And so when you only have an hour a day, 2 hours a day to dedicate to your business, you got to get the most out of it. And I think the question I always ask people is, would you rather talk to one person for an hour, or if you're having five-minute conversations, right, being able to really go out there and have 12 conversations in an hour is going to get you a better ratio of people. And I think the big question, I think when we first start, you want everyone. Like, you'll take anything breathing. If they even hope or think weight loss, you're like, oh, I'm gonna get them into my business. That's
been there, done that. I so know. When I started out, if they had a pulse and a credit card, man, I was taking them.
I think we had the same mentor. Literally, like, you would do the breathing test. If they're breathing, are they a prospect? And it's like, yep, you're going to go talk to them. But the truth is, what really makes the difference, and this this goes back to, valuing your time, is you want to see if people are willing to go out there and meet you halfway. And so, you're not going to spend your time and invest your time if someone's not willing to meet you somewhere in the middle. Most of the people that are going to join your business, whatever your product or service is, have already made their decision long before you ever showed up that they want to turn into something. So if your product is weight loss, at some point in time prior to your conversation, in their head, they may not even know it consciously yet, they've made the decision that they want to look a certain way. Like, in their head, they saw the Men's Health or the Women's Oxygen magazine, and they saw someone and said, I want to look like that, in their head. And now they're just trying to piece the puzzle in their mind as to, how am I going to do that? What products am I going to use? And they're open to your idea. But if they're not even on the radar, if they haven't even mentally made the decision that I'm going to look like this, or I'm going to lose this weight, or whatever your product or service does, you may not have a solution for them at that time. So, I think the big thing here is just determining, can I be a solution for the person across from me? And that only takes a couple minutes. So you might spend some time having a conversation, finding out what's going on in life, how's the family, how's the kids, what's going on with the career. But when it comes to actually having the conversation about what you do, it's short and sweet. You're just piquing their interest. You're seeing if they want that next step. And it could be as simple as, you mentioned that your kids are going into college right now, you're struggling with trying to figure out how to pay for them, you know, if I could show you a way to go out there and potentially, you know, offset some of that cost or find you a solution, would you be open to taking a peek at what I'm doing? And it's just in that little bit that you're just trying to find out, are they open? You're not trying to close them. You're not trying to get them in. It's just determining whether or not, you know, they even want to take a peek at what you're doing right now.
Love that. And that's so very true. And it makes sense. Less is more, in the sense of when you try to get virtually everyone with that pulse and the credit card, I mean, you end up with lots of casualties. And in essence, what you're saying is you're qualifying the person. You're finding out if we're a fit, if we have a solution to something that's going on in their life. And I think it's so important to take the time to actually dig in and qualify them. And then I like what you said is you just sort of put it out there. And if they show an interest, fantastic, you can take it the next step. If they don't cram it down their throat. I mean, that's part of the thing that people don't like about the industry is that when they feel like, hey, I'm not interested in what you're doing, Jason, and then you proceed to cram it down my throat, it gives the industry, the profession, a bad name. And I think if more of the leaders, more of the people in the industry really treated it like a profession and stepped up and actually conducted themselves in a professional manner, I mean, we would all succeed. The entire industry would do better. And I love that. And I think that's a brilliant point to teach your people. Now, the other thing that you're really big on in your prospecting principles is you don't have to be an expert. You want to expand upon that?
Sure, yeah. I think that I meet some people that come into this business that feel that they need to know everything about everything. And that's not to say that you shouldn't take your time and really understand the industry, be a professional about what you do and learn as much as you can. But that doesn't also mean that you have to learn everything before you open your mouth and have a conversation. Like I said, what you're really trying to do is just determine whether or not someone's open. And this will tie to the third point, which I'm sure you're leading me here towards as well, Warren. But the point here is when you're first starting, your goal is to be the traffic director, right? The person that just directs them to where they can access information and resources. So when I say you don't have to be the expert right now, what I'm really saying is your friends love you, they trust you, right? That's why you're having a conversation right now. But you may or may not be in a place where they trust your either health opinion, product opinion, business opinion, because your friends have seen you do the best things in your life, and let's be honest, your friends have seen you do the most silly things in your life as well. And so a lot of times I call this the Instagram filter. They see you a certain way. So by directing them to information, and this is not just important for you, but this is important for your team members that have maybe are going through their own, like, you know, Warren and I are in a weight loss company, that are going through their own weight loss process as we speak, right? Now to go talk to an athlete that's been in shape for their entire life, they may feel a little incongruent having this conversation. Not that they should, but they may feel that way. So by being the traffic director saying, hey, check out this video, check out this information, you know, meet this person, it allows them to be able to take the pressure off themselves and allow the tool, the information to do the work for them. So that's what I mean when they say you don't always have to be the expert.
Love it. And you're right. I mean, that's one of the things, and such a brilliant point. We have lots of doctors that are involved in our company, and a lot of times practitioners, they can enroll a ton of people. I mean, they'll bring in so many people, and then they'll tell them all the facts, and then you bring in Mary, and she even gets great results, but she won't tell a soul. And it's sort of like, come on, Mary. And Mary's mindset is, well, I don't know what Dr. So-and-so knows. I can't do this. And I think one of the biggest turning points for practitioners, whether it's a massage therapist, a chiropractor, a physio, a doctor, it doesn't matter. Anyone that's viewed as a practitioner, if they would start leveraging the tools, what you just said, Jason, and let the tools be the expert, now all of a sudden Mary can go, well, what the heck did Dr. So-and-so say? He just sort of asked me what my goals for the summer were, and I said I wanted to get down 20 pounds, and he said, well, hey, check this out. Like, have you ever considered intermittent fasting? And no, what's that? Well, here, check this out. And now she watched this video, and all of a sudden, oh, my goodness, I want to try this. And in her mind's going, what did he do? He just directed me to this video. I can do this. And that's one of the biggest things is we need our team members believing I can do this. So, yeah, absolutely. Now, your third point in this is monkey see, monkey do as far as prospecting. And I think I know exactly where you're going here, my friend.
Well, you touched on it. So, I mean, I think the big thing here is that every time you open your mouth, you're teaching, whether you intend to or not. And so even if you do all know the information, you do know all the answers here, the thing is, you know, if you enroll someone, let's say they come to you and say, you know, well, Warren's been amazing. He knows all the answers. And, you know, I asked him about how the product works, and he broke it down for me simply, easily, effectively, and I enrolled. And, you know, they might say, you know what, I got this amazing product experience, but I don't know all the things that Warren does, so I don't mind referring maybe a friend or two to him because people are asking me why I look great, but I don't think I could do what Warren does because I don't have time to have all that knowledge and that background and everything else that he does, right, because he's just amazing. On the flip side, though, I think in a perfect scenario, perfect world, it's what you just touched on, Warren. You're allowing people to really direct them and saying, hey, you know what, even if I know all the answers, I'm still going to direct you to the information, direct you to the video, direct you to where you can access it. Because the end result is they're still going to enroll. The person still enrolls. They say, you know what, that was so simple. Warren just directed me to a video. Man, if he can do it, I can do it. You know, I could fit this in the pockets of my day. I can really go out there and build this business. The result technically is the same. They enrolled. But what it transitions to, what it expands to, is them having the sense of confidence or the belief that they can do it as well. And I think when you really take the 30,000-foot view in this industry and understand that we're in a business where – it's not about how good of a salesperson or how good of a marketer or how good of a connector you and I are individually, Warren, but it really goes back to this business model is about helping hundreds, if not thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people out there to be successful. It means that what I do needs to be teachable. And I think the word in the industry all the time is duplicatable, but it needs to be teachable to hundreds of thousands of people out there that they can do this as well. And so it's just as important that, yes, you enroll someone, but it's more important that they feel that they can have a sense of doing this as well. And that's why, you know, monkey see, monkey do, keep it simple, keep it easy, keep it duplicatable, and the rest kind of takes care of itself.
Wow. You're right. I have nothing to add to that one. We're always teaching, as you said, whatever we do. And here's the one thing is, you know, when we do something incorrect or wrong, I mean, that seems to duplicate like wildfire. The stuff that we're doing right and we want our team members to do, it seems for whatever reason, I don't know whatever law this is, but there's almost a resistance. I mean, you do one thing a little bit off and man, your entire team's duplicating that instantly. I don't know why that is, but it seems to happen. Now, here's a question for you, because in our industry, doing, call it an opportunity meeting, a business briefing, a launch party. I mean, in our industry, pulling a group of individuals together where you or I could show up and then share sort of what's been happening for Mary or John and why they're getting these results, and they have a group of their friends there. I mean, we all know, I mean, if someone brings 10 guests over, and that's the scenario, you have a couple of people that have had great results with the product, whether it's energy, recovery, weight loss, whatever it may be, you will enroll easily like 50 to 80% of the crowd. I mean, that's just reality. Now, one of the challenges that comes up with a lot of new people is they'll, okay, I'll do this launch party. They're going to call, they'll Facebook a group of people, and then you and I will get a call, and it's sort of like, well, Jason, I only have three people that are showing up, and two of them are already in. I mean, I have one guest, like, yeah. And they feel deflated. How do you sort of deal with that? Because I know pulling little groups together is really the fuel that drives to a monthly meeting, that drives to a big quarterly event. I mean, it is really the prerequisite of success. So can we finish off discussing that a little bit and your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think there's a lot of, even on this call, there's a lot of conversations these days, and it's kind of the trend where, and there's nothing wrong with it, where a lot of the teaching is theory, and I don't mean theory as in like it's just an idea, But I mean in the sense where a trainer will get in front of the room and you'll teach on a topic or subject. We're teaching today on prospecting. I think what's missing a lot from the industry and what I see is practical, down and dirty work. And that kind of means actually when I've got someone, and this goes back to just taking responsibility, when I've got someone that I'm working with and they don't have the show up ratio that they want, or they've only got a handful of people or one person coming over to their house or to a Zoom presentation or webinar or something like that, what that really means in my head is they underestimated the amount of calls they had to make. They didn't pick up the phone enough, and maybe they were too tentative, too scared, or didn't have the skill or the confidence to be able to invite someone properly over. And so we'll go back to the drawing board, and actually I will sit there if I'm personally working with someone or the team is working with someone, and we'll sit there and actually have these calls and conversations. All right, great. You know, let's make a call. Let me listen. All right, great. Listen to me make a call. I'll make a call. You make a call. I'll make a call. You make a call. And there's a great book out there, and it's escaping my mind right now, but it talks a lot about in the game of sports, a lot of times coaches want to overanalyze and overteach something. And all of a sudden you've got this new client that's thinking about, well, my back, my forearm's got to go here, and I've got to spin the ball this way, and I've got to place my leg here, and they're not getting it. And a lot of times someone being able to model and watch what you do is more valuable than you just telling them what they're supposed to be doing. So I think getting in the trenches and actually having calls with them is a big part of what's going to make the success, what's going to allow them to be successful. And then when it doesn't work, right, because it will, I think the initial reaction as an upline, I used to do this very early on, is I would try to be stern. I'd try to be, the authoritative figure and say, well, this is what you did wrong, and this is how you messed up. And people are people, guys. I mean, I think that I make it a point. When something doesn't necessarily go as planned, obviously, if giving them the feedback, letting them know, but more importantly, building up their confidence again so they can come back to the drawing board and go do the process again, because there are going to be more failures in this business than success. More often than not, it's not going to go the way that you're looking for. And I think it's our job as coaches and as mentors and as uplines here to really raise these people up, to pour greatness back into them. Because if it wasn't for a couple great conversations in my career where it could have gone horribly differently, I may not have been in the industry. I may not have stayed in the industry. And it was someone else's pouring of belief back into me saying, no, you can do this, right? You got to dust yourself off. You got to learn this process. You really got to commit to the skill. You got to be picking up the phone. If you really want 10 to show up, you better be calling 50, right? And it essentially clicked for me. It wasn't the first time. It wasn't the second time. It probably wasn't even the third time that I had a successful party or presentation. So I think both sides, being a great coach and teaching, also pouring back in greatness if it does happen.
I love that. As Jimmy Smith says, an individual that's earned tens of millions of dollars in this industry, a true professional, he says, where else can you fail 90% of the time and become ridiculously wealthy? And that's the truth. I mean, you just said it there. There's more failures than success. But those wins that we get along the way, Jason, as you said, it was those few key conversations. It was a few key people that chose to link arms with you that drive enormous numbers. I mean, if I think about the Take Action team, I think we have like 13 platinums on our team, and yet, I mean, we're, what, over 280,000 people around the globe. I didn't do it all myself. It was a group of 13 committed people that made up their mind they were going to do this one way or another. They're going to figure it out, whatever it takes. Life can happen. Life does happen, let me tell you. But they weren't going to be derailed. And it's those kind of individuals with that bulletproof belief, like you. You are going to be a multiple six-figure income. Now, I'll tell you this, Jason. I absolutely believe you need to scratch off the multiple six-figure money earner. I believe you have everything that it takes for you to become a seven-figure money earner in this industry. I know that for a fact. I actually believe within the next 36 to 48 months, you'll be a seven-figure money earner in this industry. It's yours there for the taking, my friend. You have everything that it takes to succeed in this industry. Just keep doing what you're doing, and you will be successful.
Thanks, Warren.
Yeah. Well, guys, Jason, I just want to thank you for your time. Wow, what a treat. I can't believe that. Like, I felt like we were just chatting for 10 minutes. If any of you listening want a team member to get a copy of this podcast, there's three ways. You can go to takeactionteam.com, and on the team website, you can subscribe to the email list, and you'll automatically get these podcasts sent out to you. You can go to Facebook and go Take Action Team and join that Facebook group, and Katie every week faithfully puts in the podcast, so you can listen to them there. Or you can go to Podomatic and just follow the Take Action Team. And again, you'll get these podcasts so you can listen to them as you work out. Because again, numerous times through this call, we all heard Jason say, you know what, he's reading this book, he's reading that book, he's listening to this information. He kept putting the information in as he kept doing, and that's the reason for his success. So with that, everyone, have a spectacular week. Jason, thank you so much, and I can't wait to chat with you again, my friend.
It's my honor. Thank you so much for having me, Warren.
You bet. Good night, everyone. Take care.